What's your Thanksgiving song?
No.
The cranberry sauce. We're having mashed potatoes. Ooh, the turkey looks great.
Len.
Thank you for loving me.
Len.
Thank you for being there.
Oh, God.
Everyone's thanking.
Len.
The whole world's thanking you.
Stop.
Thanking
Len.
Us for thanking
Stop.
You.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Cranberry sauce. We're having mashed potatoes. Ooh, the turkey looks great. Thank you for loving me.
Len.
Thank you for being there.
Please.
Thank you for loving me. Everyone's thanking. The whole
Len.
World's thanking you. Thanking
Stop.
Us for thanking you.
Well, we've covered the Sitchin stuff pretty good and the Joe V question. He has one more. Thankfully, it's only a sentence. He says, the sadly defunct television series Millennium. Discuss.
I would love to discuss Millennium. It's been too long since I've seen it.
Hmm.
That's one of those shows that I'm going to need to go back and rent, actually. I did watch them when they were out. I saw most of them, I believe. Certainly I was watching The X-Files intently at the time. But as I recall, Millennium came out right about the time that my work schedule conflicted, and I wasn't able to watch it as much as I wanted to. I enjoyed the episodes that I saw, but I can't go into it much detail on them because I don't remember them that well now.
Yeah. I'm totally unfamiliar with Millennium. So that was part of the X-Files universe?
Yes, it was a spinoff of the X-Files.
Okay.
It was in season... Hold on a second, I'll figure this out. I've just been watching X-Files again, as a matter of fact. Season 6 or season 7?
Mm.
I think it was season 6. And I'll have to stop and figure out exactly what year that was.
I vaguely remember it. I can say here, I can read, while you look for that, I figure it's only going to take a minute. Here's the rest of Joe V's email. I figure it deserves mention because you mentioned it before we started the show. He says, as always, Bruce, you're a fantastic guest. Whether I agree with you or not, you're always engaging. Banal, keep up the damn fine work. And then he says, I'll be drinking Belgian beer at the time this airs. What a humble brag that is.
Pass me one, man.
Yeah. Look forward to hearing a fantastic show after I stagger out of bed tomorrow. So that's kind of what I love about this episode in a lot of ways. You know, folks are usually listen to the program within their work, but this is an episode that a lot of people are probably listening to while they're waiting to get on the plane or on the plane on their way to grandma's or driving to grandma's. So we kind of do ingrain ourselves into the holiday in a lot of ways. Hopefully they've covered the children's ears or put a DVD on for them in the back.
Well, I'm flattered and pleased. I'm very glad that I can entertain people while they're getting through whatever their holiday nonsense is.
Yeah. It's a little 2-hour escape where they can join us at the beyond the adults table.
There you go.
Did you figure out the Millennium thing?
1999, yes. I had just started work right then, and it was not fitting comfortably into my work schedule at that time. That was why I didn't get to see it too much at the time. I caught some of them in rerun. It was in the seventh season, just by the by. It was the fourth episode of the seventh season.
Yeah.
Deliberate spinoff. Chris Carter had actually only intended X-Files to run 5 years in the first place. So when it went beyond that, I mean, I don't think he was disappointed, but he was looking for something else to do, and he spun off Millennium, which was a pretty good idea. He was going with the idea of this Millennium group that were kind of waiting for the end of the world, or, you know, it kind of tied in with the whole X-Files concept of aliens returning and reclaiming the planet or something like that.
Yeah.
So they were roughly connected, although I think Millennium had a bit more of a supernatural bent to it. I do remember enjoying episodes of it. Unfortunately, it's been so long since I've seen them, I don't remember them that well. I was, you know, having just life problems at the time. You know, I had to do the job.
Exactly. Well, it's hard to reminisce about a short-lived TV series anyway, even if it was really...
I think it ran 2 years, as
oh,
I recall.
Wow.
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, that's better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's a respectable run, especially for a spinoff. If it had gone 3 years, they could have syndicated it. I don't think anyone's really shown it since, but I'm sure it has to be on disc. And it's one of those, like I said, I've been going through the X-Files just the last few weeks. I've been watching all the episodes again. I've only got like a season and a half left to go. I didn't watch them in order. I watched the last two seasons, which I didn't get to see when they were running. I started with those, and then I kind of worked my way backward. So I'm kind of finishing up seasons 4 and 5 right now. Once I'm done with those, I've pretty well watched them all again.
Okay. I never got into X-Files. I'm one of those people that never got into it.
So, everyone's got their thing, man.
Yeah, I can't speak to it. People rave about it. A lot of people in this field rave about it, for obvious reasons, but I never really...
I can tell you why that is. It's because Mulder and Scully are all of us.
Exactly, yeah.
They represent us. They're doing what we do.
I mean, I get why it was popular and everything. I just never really... To me, how long did it go? Like 8, 9 years now?
9 years.
Okay, yeah. That's a lot of TV to get into. Plus,
that is a lot of TV to get into. I'll tell you what amazes me is that Stargate actually went further than that.
Well, I explained to somebody, too. We're going to get into Lost in a moment from one of the questions, but I felt burned after Lost, so it took me a long time. I never
Tell
got into
about it.
Any
and
of these.
We cried in each other's beer the next day.
Yes. So I never got into any of these other shows that followed either. People talk about Breaking Bad and Walking Dead, and they all sound excellent. But to me, it's like I don't have the time. I you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. It's I'll wait now and really catch these shows in mass binges. So I don't.
Where I am, I rent them now.
Hmm.
There's apparently a whole lot of people just like me.
Yeah.
They can't figure anything out on ratings anymore. Because there are too many people who won't sit in front of their TV and watch it when it's on. They'll pick it up on a website afterward, or they'll be like me, and they'll wait until the series has a whole season wrapped up. Then they'll rent it when it comes out on disc, and they'll just watch the whole thing in a binge.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And sure enough, I'm not alone. One of my friends was just telling me he'd read some articles about this not too long back.
Yeah, it's a very popular trend. That's kind of my plan with these other shows that have come out recently. Someday I'll sit down and get into them, but
yeah,
I can't after Lost, you know. There's only so much time in the day, as you know.
Yeah, there are only so many hours in the day. This is the reason why I did my best to catch every title that I could in Hollywood versus the Aliens. A few of them were going to get missed, either by negligence or simply because I had too many others. You got so many irons in the fire, you can't keep track of absolutely everything. So sure enough, a couple of them got missed. But that's why we talk about them now.
Exactly. David McIntyre has the next question. This is a good segue from what you were just saying. He wants to know if I can ask you if you originally set out to make your books intentionally academic. He usually gets through most books in a week, but both of your books were 6 weeks apiece. It was a nice change of pace to have to get into the books. Put the eyebrows on it, he says in parentheses, if you know where I'm coming from. The references, footnotes, etc. were exhaustive but ultimately rewarding. Bruce Rocks rocks. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In answer to your question, the simple Reader's Digest version is yes. Yes, I did. I set out to write an academic book and a scholarly book. I also wanted to make it completely accessible to the average reader. Which is a little bit of a challenge, but I do think that I met that, and I'm very, very pleased with the result. I think anyone could pick up either of my books and read through them and not have any trouble. It might take them a little bit longer, but I haven't come across anybody yet who has had trouble understanding them.
Whether they agree with them or not,
that's an entirely different subject, but they at least understand them.
Hmm.
And that was what I was trying to do. I also wanted to make sure that I had all my T's crossed, all my I's dotted, and that my notes had notes, so that any academics who happened to be reading it or any scholars who happened to be reading it could come at me. Say, we need a common meeting ground and a common discussion ground, and where you do that is with the academic format. So the academic format's all nailed down. It's like, you know, if you want to disagree with any of this, that's fine, but you have to go at it from the evidence. What you do when you put yourself into that format is you are forcing the arguments onto the evidence. Say, look, you can't attack me. If you have a problem with the evidence, fine. Let's go at the evidence. Name your case. Let's go to the specific evidence you have a problem with, and let's talk about that.
Right.
So, yes, I was deliberately writing it in exactly that style and that format.
And I think it took me about a month to read the Hollywood versus the Aliens, but to your credit, it's a massive book, and it really is a page-turner. Because I remember not just the jury, I remember many instances of reading the book. And I can't say that for a lot of the books I've read for the show. But I mean, I can literally close my eyes and put myself on my back deck on a nice May afternoon reading the 80s chapter of Hollywood versus the Aliens. I can still remember this. So it left a mark for me, for sure.
That's very flattering.
Well, I mean it. I can honestly tell you, I can really put myself there. I will allow this quick little side question from Hillbilly, because we've covered this a lot of times, and we're on the topic of the books. Well, what can we get? I usually do this toward the end of the show, but any update on the chances of your books getting reprinted? Because with the Kindle explosion, now is the time for sort of a renaissance for these two books. People would really want to read them in that way, I think, in a big way, because they're so long, and you know how people are whiny and.
Oh yeah,
they feel better about reading a 400-page book of it if it was the size of a magazine.
I had a friend of mine suggest to me that I might want to split the books into sections, because really, in reprint anymore, my publisher suggested to me when they went out of print that I go ahead and self-publish them, because apparently that's what everybody does now.
Hmm.
There are some problems with self-publishing. It fixes a lot of problems, more problems than it creates. But one of the problems it creates is the price that you have to stick on the thing, if it's a big book, is usually pretty high, because it's not cheap.
Yeah, we mean physically self-publishing.
Yes. Even if you're going through a self-publishing company, and even if they're only doing it by demand or by personal order, it's still a big volume.
Right.
It's a lot of paper and a lot of ink, and just to cover costs, you have to charge double whatever it costs to get the thing made in order to make any kind of money at all. So both of my books are enormous, the second one especially, and I'm not sure what the actual cost would be of getting any of those things printed. The advantage is that Kindle exists, and
right.
Sadly, everyone seems to want Kindle anymore. It does have its advantages. I don't care for it myself because it gives me eye strain, and I like to hold the book.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Kindle fan, but I can deal with it.
Right. If I'm going to do it on Kindle, I'm either going to have a special pad to do it, or I've got to be sitting in front of my computer screen, and I've got other things to do on my computer screen. This is why I go out and drink coffee, so I can read books. It's a perfect time to sit down and read a book. I like the smell of the book. I like the feel of the book. I like the heft of it. I just love books. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
But the Kindle is extremely helpful in that it cuts the cost by half of what someone wants to buy, and that encourages people to buy more of it. If I broke the book into parts, or the books into parts, it might be a hell of a lot easier on the publishing costs. I'm not sure what else I'd have to do in order to make that happen. I'm kind of looking into a lot of this. I'll probably be getting my PDFs back from the publisher within a month or two, I'm going to say. They're not really that expensive. I just kind of need to come up with the money. You actually have to give them a fee to get your own book back. Which, it's not that much of a problem. They'd let you know that in advance. It's the PDF. You're buying the PDF, basically.
Yeah.
And then you can do whatever you want with it. Once I have the PDFs back and I figure out what I need to do and get a little bit of research into what the best way is and the most economical way is to put them into reprint, I am planning on putting them into reprint. I'm just not sure exactly what the logistics are going to be yet, so I can't give a date. But I'm looking at sometime next year, sometime in 2014.
All right. Well, I can almost guarantee you, unless you do it, that you'll be asked about it on the Ruxgiving 2014 special, so don't...
I will probably have whatever issues resolved by then and have figured out what I'm going to do.
Nice.
I won't be putting them both out at the same time. I'll probably put out Architects first, mostly because it's easy. Architects is a pretty easy one to put out. With Hollywood especially, there are picture rights issues.
Yeah. I think we talked about that, yeah.
Well, and this is why in the old days, when you used to see a hardback with lots of great pictures in it, and then it came out in mass paperback and it had no pictures at all, that's why. It's because it was too expensive and too difficult to go back and get the picture rights all over again and renegotiate them for a mass market paperback edition. So they just dropped them. That would kind of hurt my book. My book wants pictures very much. But already there are at least a half dozen pictures I'm going to have to drop straight off the bat just because I know the studios are impossible to do business with. The studios that I did business with at the time are not the studios that I would be doing business with now, and I know what those studios are and just how difficult they are to deal with. So some of them I'm just going to have to drop straight off the bat. On the flip side and the better side of things, there are also some pictures that are public domain that I wanted to put in the first time but didn't know that they were public domain. So I can add a few where I'm going to have to drop a few. If I were smart, I'd drop a lot of them, but that would also probably hurt sales.
Well, that's why you just slap a revised and expanded on the cover, and what you take out counts as revised.
Yeah, that's true.
That way, if someone writes to you and they're like, "What happened to that part?" you can be like, "That's it's been revised."
You charged me twice as much and gave me no pictures at all. What the hell's the matter with you? You're welcome to the self-publishing world, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, then you write back and you're like, didn't you see the word revised?
That's what revised means.
Darren wants to know, actually, before I get to Darren's thing, David, who just wrote in, he says, regarding you, he says, you are awesome, and he wants me to let you know that. So,
thank you.
Yes, and I, while we're there, Chuck Brewer says, hell's yes, my fave guest, and James Scheiste says, oh, hell yeah. That was when I announced the episode, so.
I'm just amazed I even have fans, so thank you, guys.
They go crazy for you, Bruce, and you know I'm a fan because I keep trying to get you on the show all the time. We've built this whole holiday around you. I don't want the Men in Black hassling you now because we've built a faux religion around.
I don't think they're going to bother me. I think they've pretty well put me by the wayside, and I am very, very happy about that.
Yeah. Darren in San Diego wants to know. He says he's a longtime listener of the program. He's wondering if I could ask you what your thoughts are on the movie They Live. I think we talked about this on the original Rocks Trilogy. We can revisit it.
That's a great movie.
He likes how John Carpenter made the 1% as alien invaders using the planet Earth as their third world.
Yep. I love that movie. Nice to see anyone remembers that movie.
Hmm.
I'm surprised they haven't remade that, actually. It was pretty popular back when it was kind of a cult hit when it was first made, and it's still popular with a lot of us. I'm definitely one of that cult. I just thought it was a brilliant idea. You've basically got this, like you said, you got the 1%, and they're keeping the other 99% asleep with their hypnotic programming and all this stuff. Unless you happen to get the glasses, you can see them for what they are, and they see you seeing them.
Yeah.
That's really good stuff. Yeah, that's a great movie. That's ripe for a remake.
Yeah, there's not much really to say about it. That's a good jumping off point to John Carpenter, though. Do you think there was a message there? Because it does kind of connect to the whole idea of, in a lot of ways, it connects to the whole idea of an Ikean reptilian conspiracy theory.
That may have been where he got it. I think that Ike was writing his stuff after They Live, but I don't think that those theories were exactly new with David Icke. My guess, and it is entirely a guess, I've never really spoken with John Carpenter, I like a lot of his movies, is that he was just kind of playing with that and mostly using it for political purposes. I think he was kind of just slamming on the Republican Party for the most part. But, in other words, I don't know whether there was an actual agenda behind it or not, or whether he was consciously part of it. I think he was just having a hell of a lot of fun and getting to smear his political enemies. But it does fit in very nicely with the thesis of being controlled and whether or not that control comes from specifically people down here or perhaps someplace else. The best thing about it, and they played with this quite a bit in Blade 3 too, which I really liked, is the idea that, look, the vampires own everything, man. There are people that play along with them and there are human beings that play along with them and make it easier for them. They're sort of the satraps of the aliens or the vampires or whichever. Okay. You know what? I don't even really disagree with that worldview. Everyone's going to put a different name on exactly who that 1% is, and I'm not going to go there. But, yeah, we all know that there's the 1%, and that for the most part we're managed and made sheep.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're saying that about the political connection. People need to realize and also think about it that sometimes in these movies, the aliens are supposed to represent a human. It's like a reverse of the conspiracy almost. You know what I mean? It's the aliens.
Sure.
The aliens represent, I don't know, the neocons or the liberals or whatever.
That's right. One of the great things about science fiction, Rod Serling used to talk about this quite a bit, and he's completely right. You can't write a drama or a piece that slams another party or another race unless you create an entirely different thing and sort of graft everything that you wanted to say onto your invention.
Right.
In other words, if you give them a different name, if you conceal them, then you can do that. Gene Roddenberry couldn't openly say something about the Russians, but he could say something about the Klingons. He could have the Federation dealing with the Klingons in particular ways and say everything that he wanted to say about the Russians by doing that. That's just the way you do it. You put on that kind of mask, and that's how you play the game.
Okay. Lone Gunman. This is the guy that caused all this, Bruce. He's the one that requested you way back, 5, 6, 7 years ago at this point.
See what you did. Aren't
yeah.
you ashamed of yourself, Lone Gunman?
He is the man that launched 1,000 Rux episodes by his mere request, and I can't thank him enough, so kudos to him. He's indelibly left his mark on this program.
Well, he's got a great moniker.
Indeed, indeed. He wants to know what you think of the... This is a fascinating question, too, so clearly this guy knows what he's talking about. He wants to know what you think of the whole off-world slash elite scenario that has been in recent movies like Elysium and Oblivion, and also was part of Alternative 3 in 1977.
You just hit it right there. You answered your own question. It all comes from Alternative 3. Alternative 3 was a government disinformation... I can't prove this for a fact, but Alternative 3 was a government disinformation program probably used primarily to deflect attention from the Church Committee's MKUltra investigations that were going on right at the same time in Congress. The MKUltra stuff is the CIA mind control experiment, which gets into programmed assassins, the Manchurian candidate, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Information on that was coming out in leaps and bounds by the Church Committee, and documents were being shredded by the box load by George W. Bush, as a matter of fact. George Bush Sr. George Herbert Walker Bush was actually doing that, who was head of the CIA at the time. He was shredding as many MKUltra documents as he possibly could at the same time that they were landing in Congress's lap. And Congressman John Marks wrote a couple of excellent books just on the boxes of material that he was going through on stuff coming from the CIA. But that didn't come out until, you know, many years later, because it takes a long time to go through all those. But anyway, while those investigations were taking place in Congress, along with a lot of other CIA abuses, along comes Alternative 3 out of Britain. Alternative 3 purporting to be a documentary and showing on a science show that ordinarily does show documentaries, did an April Fool's episode that wasn't on April Fool's.
Ah.
But this was later. This was how they were later palming it off.
Yep.
Oh, it was an April Fool's joke. They just made this scenario that the secret government conspiracy was that the 1% knew that the world was coming to an end, that the resources weren't going to work, that catastrophes were going to happen, there were going to be riots, blah, 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 whatever. Everything was going to fall apart. So they were preparing their little base off-world, where they were going to live and set up a whole new world and a whole new future. Now, that has taken off into sci-fi like nobody's business. It's a great scenario. I can see why people want to play with that, because it's got very dramatic elements and it's a hell of a lot of fun. I haven't seen Elysium yet. I will see it. This is one of those that I'll probably just rent. A lot of these things I get when they come out on rental.
Right.
I'll rent it. I don't need to rush out to the theater to catch it. But I'm sure I'll enjoy it, and it's definitely a fun scenario to play with. As to whether or not that's actually happening, I don't believe that there's any kind of actual off-world conspiracy, simply because it would be too difficult. I don't believe we have the technology available for something like that. Though if we did,
right.
Then, yeah, I imagine they'd be doing something like that.
If anything, they could be, if, again, we're sort of going under the auspices of an idea that they can't get off the planet, if anything, they could then in turn just be underground. They could just be developing some escape plan just to bail on us and go live underground.
Well, I'll tell you what's funny about that. That's been in place since the 1950s.
That's what I mean.
That's the Pentagon,
yeah.
That's Washington, D.C., that's the Kremlin, that's Novosibirsk. That's all these, you know, super, super strong military strongholds. There's a whole city underneath Washington, D.C.
Yeah, we just touched on it because I'm sure places like London, Paris, Tokyo, they all have their own super underground complexes of various sophistication levels.
Of course they do. There's even a practical reason for that. The practical reason for that is simply the bomb. We forget about the bomb. The bomb is still there. If we had, you know, massive nuclear strikes, this all came in, under Ronald Reagan. He kind of called it to the head with Executive Order Rex 84. This was the idea that there has to be the continuity of command in case of a nuclear strike or a massive catastrophe. You know, if we got hit with some biological agent or something like that, maybe you have massive catastrophe in the communication chain and command.
Yeah.
This is where you have to have alternate living quarters and safe places to be. So, of course, they were making massive underground bunkers and safe houses for all practical intents and purposes. That's still a viable threat. That could still happen. I don't put it on the high realm of possibility, just because the civilized nations that have these things are smart enough not to use them for precisely that reason, which does make you wonder why they're not smart enough not to build them in the first place, but there you go.
Hmm. Okay. I think part of the whole thing, too, the underlying message, I'm completely, I'm like a blind man in an orgy here. I'm just feeling my way through this because I haven't seen Elysium or Oblivion, but based on what I know that they're about, I feel like there's probably this underlying sort of feeling that people are feeling left behind by the powers that be. And it seems like worse than ever, than it ever has in my lifetime. So it stands to reason that would manifest itself in films.
Yeah. It's been pervasive for decades. We were talking about the Kennedy assassination earlier. I think it all went south when Kennedy got hit, precisely because the people that hit him never were called for it. So we got a new form of government, cemented itself into place, and it's never leaving. They'd always been there, but now they're cemented into place and they're never leaving.
Yeah.
That's how things are going to be till doomsday, folks.
So stick around. Okay, now Red Sun Superman, who has rarely ventures out of the BOA forum, but he's actually in the chat tonight, so that's a good thing. And he posted a series of questions this afternoon. They're pretty short ones, so we'll cover those. He wants to know, what do you think of current shows like Sleepy Hollow and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I really want to see both of those shows. Sleepy Hollow hasn't fit into my schedule very well. I'm probably going to end up renting it as soon as they have a whole, or if it's on a marathon. If they run a marathon of them and I'm home, then I'll watch them then. If not, then I'll have to wait for it to come on disc. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of the same way. I very much want to see both of those shows. I hear fantastic things about both of them. And I just like the look of them. I like the commercials, and with Sleepy Hollow especially, that was just such a weird premise from the start. I kind of raised my eyebrows when I was first hearing it. But then I saw some commercials, and I said, you know what? If you went at this well enough, you could probably pull it off, and it sounds like they're doing it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing both of those.
Okay. The one that looks good to me is Grimm, but I haven't checked that one out at all.
My sister is big into Grimm. I haven't seen it yet. She just loves that show. I get that stuff from Lost Girl, I think, is my favorite one of that genre.
Mm. What's that one?
It's largely the same thing. All of these things are supernatural subculture genre, basically.
Yeah, because they have that one that's like a fairy tale. It's from, like, the makers of Lost. It's Once Upon a Time. That looks pretty good, too, but I never really got into it.
You know, I think I saw an episode of that once when I was out at the coffee shop. They've got a TV there, which they usually show sports on. But sometimes it just kind of gets forgotten, and I think that was what was on one night that I was watching. Whatever it was, I was kind of enjoying it.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. Also, Red Sun Superman wants to know, hopefully this doesn't get too deep, if you could have created an ending for Lost, forgetting the whole final season storyline, what would your explanation of the island be, and what role would Vincent the Dog have played in it?
Man, I'll tell you, there's a question for you.
Yeah, we only...
Okay, if I had had a month
to
work on that one, I could have come up with an answer for you. And if I was willing to go through Lost again, which I will not. But if I was willing to go through Lost again and actually look over all of the various story elements, if I've got a real gripe with J.J. Abrams, it's this. He could have come up with something that would have tied up everything. He could have tied up everything. Even if he didn't know what it was in advance, he could have come up with something and done it. A good writer could do it. If you gave me a month to go over all of the different story elements and what he did with them, I could come up with some way to tie them together.
Yeah.
Cannot tell you what that would be, but I'd come up with some good sci-fi thing to tie it all together.
I agree with that. I mean, they had the whole summer before the season started. They could have just sat down one day, made a huge list of all the questions they needed to answer, and actually done it.
7 years. He could have done this at any time. My one great gripe with J.J. Abrams is that he created the ultimate triumph of style over substance and proved that you can do a cock tease for 7 years and never have to pay off.
I agree. I think, in fairness to J.J. Abrams, he turned the show over to those two other guys that turned out to be pretty obnoxious, but...
Yeah, but he's responsible for that, too.
Yeah, his name's on it, so he should have stepped in and made sure they were doing the right thing.
That's right.
When they
were still responsible. You still got to fix that.
Mm.
And you could. I mean, seriously, just 1 month. You get a good writer in there, in 1 month, you can come up with something that will tie everything together. Invent something. You'll come up with it.
The scary part is, will this, I was going to say one thing, but then I thought of another thing in my head here. First of all, it's really sad because I loved the show, and as it was closing out, everyone was excited. It felt like this thing was going to live on anyway, and they were talking about maybe movies or comic books or something like that, and then it ended, and it's just been dead ever since. There's no...
Because nothing tied together and nothing made any sense.
Right. People just completely turned on it, and even the other part that I was about to say before I wanted to say that was that it's kind of sad. Sometimes on rare occasions, I don't know if I'm feeling nostalgic or what, I'll pop into these lost chat rooms or message boards, and they, you know, there are people that have taken far more than a month and probably do tie up the whole thing using the convoluted ending that we were given, but they shouldn't have to. That's the whole point of it. Like,
they shouldn't have to.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to spend a month of your own time explaining what they told us. So
yeah,
that's we're totally in agreement on all that.
If your audience has to write the thing for you, you've got a problem.
Exactly.
So you don't have a story.
Choose your own adventure.
If Abrams had not redeemed himself with the Star Trek reboot, I'd just completely boot him myself. But he did redeem himself with the Star Trek reboot.
Okay, well, that's a perfect segue for RSS's final of his three questions, which is, are you as terrified as he is of what Disney and J.J. Abrams will do to the new Star Wars trilogy, and do you think the Timothy Zahn books should be the basis of the new trilogy series?
I'm unfamiliar with Timothy Zahn. Does he write the fan novels or something?
I presume he writes some kind of, like, officially sanctioned fan fiction.
Okay, I haven't actually read any of those, so I couldn't answer that as far as that goes. As far as Disney and Abrams, when that first came up, I was laughing quite a bit. My eyebrows raised and I laughed. I just thought, Disney is going to be doing Star Wars. But then I stopped and I thought, you know, Disney actually owns Marvel now. And the Marvel movies are just the most amazing things that come out. We were talking about this earlier. They've got a consistent... unified production design kind of for all of them. They all plugged together very well, and they ultimately led to The Avengers, which was fantastic. I'm not even that big a Marvel fan. I'm a DC guy myself. I love Batman. But these guys, they really have their act together when it comes to making movies. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Now, they've got DC just blown out of the water. Even the crappy Marvel movies still turn out well. Now, that's just to point out the fact that Disney actually owns Marvel now, and this is what comes out. Marvel is its own production company. Disney is just making the money off of it. They pretty much let Marvel do whatever they're going to do for the most part, at least as I understand it. How much of a hand they're actually going to stick into Star Wars, I don't know. I think they're probably just going to hand it to Abrams and tell him to helm the thing for them. Abrams did such a good job with the Star Trek reboot. I do have some complaints with it, but they're minimal compared to the return that he's giving us. The funny thing there is, J.J. Abrams was not at all a Star Trek fan. He never watched the series. He had no interest in Star Trek at all when they handed it to him. What he did was then go to, like, five or six guys like me who knew the show up one side, down the other, loved it, grew up with it, and he let them coach him through it. He asked them questions. He watched the whole series himself. He rented all the discs and he watched them all through. And he talked with his guys. He got a good team around him. And the next thing you know, he came up with this great reboot. He did a really, really good job. I am assuming he's going to do the exact same thing with Star Wars. But ultimately, the question can only be answered this way. Could anybody possibly do worse than George Lucas? The good news is that it has gone to anybody else. And if it was going to go to somebody, J.J. Abrams, probably a good shot. There's probably a good shot for that.
Okay. Yeah, I feel confident. They had to get it out of the hands of... I'm not even a big Star Wars fan. It's amazing that you and I are such good friends, because we have very different interests in a lot of this stuff. But I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but almost entirely because I really don't care for George Lucas and kind of how it all became its own little thing. So I'm hopeful. I'll give it a shot when the Disney remake happens. So
I'm curious to see what's done with it.
It was I don't know how you felt, but I was stunned that that they even I was stunned that that Disney bought it. That came out of nowhere. That seemed like an April Fool's type story. For like $1 billion, something crazy like that, right?
You know why? Because they're going to make 10 times that just the first year.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a pure money decision. Like, it's the same thing with Marvel. Marvel, Star Wars, any of that stuff. It's purely a money decision.
Hmm.
Where Disney is really smart in this regard, it used to be I could not stand anything that Disney did. In the last 10 years, I've come to, really come full circle with Disney. I find a lot of stuff that they put on the air now I really like, and I'm very much surprised by that. And I'm all the more surprised when I find out that they've picked up, say, Marvel and Star Wars and God knows what else they're sticking their fingers into, practically everything.
Hmm.
But what's amazing me is that they're staying hands-off with it. They're being smart businessmen. What they do is say, let's hire the people who know what to do and just make the money off it.
Yeah.
So they're actually becoming the producers and just appointing the people that they think are going to make it work. That's smart. That's good business. If Abrams could do it with Star Trek, then he can probably do it with Star Wars, especially considering that he wasn't a fan of any of this. If he feels the same way about Star Wars, that's even better because he's going to go at it and redo it and probably redo it right.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, too, about them just staying out of the way. They just do a good job of, like, setting it all up and putting the money into it, and that's it.
They put the machine into place and fund it. Exactly.
Okay. We got one question left here from the submitted ones, and then you and I are going to do a little Ruxgiving leftovers after the live show. We'll cover some of the stuff that people posted in the chat, because I felt bad that I shot them down over and over
again. See how easy we filled this? Is this amazing or what?
I know. We got one. Well... You haven't heard the final question. This is from Jim Leidica, who posted this during the conversation. He said, in a previous interview, Bruce seemed pretty sure aliens are physically visiting us. Could you ask him to summarize what made him come to this conclusion? I feel like saying to Jim, the summary is your first book, but,
yeah.
You know, give us, in 5 minutes, give us a summary of sort of what led you to all that.
5 minute recap. There are no aliens. The aliens are us. We are them. We are a colony of them. We forgot our origins. The human race did not originate here, at least not all of us. We migrated here from someplace else in antiquity. Civilization began someplace else. It moved here. It evolved on its own on this planet over a very, very long period of time. They fought wars with each other. They got us involved in those wars. They created slave races on this planet to assist them and got them involved in their wars. Eventually, there were civil wars between them that we were involved in. We had a rebellion against them, not unlike 1776. And just like 1776, even if they had the superior technology, they had a long way to come in order to try and keep us in line. And they finally just shook the dust of the planet off their heels and said, fine, screw the lot of you. You're all going to kill each other anyway. We reserve the right to take what resources we want. We'll be visiting and we'll agree to stay out of the way, but we also expect to be left alone. That's who the aliens are. They're us, we're them, they remember the connection between us, we don't. That's it in a quick summary.
Okay, and you did it actually in like a minute, which is amazing. And to tack on to that, he says, summarize what made you come to this conclusion. I'm gonna step in here, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd say the work of Sitchin, the classic quote-unquote myths and legends of all the races around the world and the various cultures that all seem to connect to this idea. I think that's kind of what made you come to this conclusion, right?
Archaeology, universal mythology, history, yes. Sitchin pointed the way, and he opened up a lot of doors. I took his research a great deal further than he was willing to take it himself. That was his own self-limitation. He's not perfect. He did a remarkable job of doing what he did do. He did make a few mistakes, but he did point the right direction. I continued his research, moved it into the directions he should have in the first place, went a great deal further with it, I think, but it's all exactly in what you're saying. It's in our history, our myth texts, it's in our archaeology. You can find it all over. All of these things led me to believe, and especially artifacts on Mars. I do believe those artifacts are there. Hopefully when we get the blog thing going on your site, I'm going to post a piece on that and show some updated pictures of the Mars phase, which I think demonstrate the point completely. I do believe that ancient Egypt was directly connected to the planet Mars in antiquity, that basically Mars moved here, and established itself in Egypt and probably a few other places around the world. That's what led me to believe what I believe and why my theories are what they are.
Okay. That covers it pretty well. All right. Well, that was the last question that we got submitted over the course of the week or so leading up to and during the show. We'll hold off on the chat questions till the show ends because we only got about 7 minutes left. Now, you teased it here. We're still working on it. Once the holidays get settled down a little bit, we're going to bring you into Banal of America, and hopefully you're going to do some writing for us, right?
Yeah. That's the plan. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm looking forward to it because, as you can see from all the emails I got and all the excitement and everything, people want to hear more from you. So have you – we've done this before. We've had this question before. But have you considered a third book? I think you said something about maybe delving into the pyramids more.
Well, I don't know. People ask me that quite a bit. My friends all would like to have me write something else. The thing is, when it comes to all the ancient astronaut stuff and the Hollywood conspiracy and all that, I've pretty well covered all the bases.
Yeah.
I mean, I could continue with that, but it's not going to be anything new that I haven't said before. It's just the ongoing saga. So I haven't really thought of writing any new books as far as that goes, or at least on that subject.
Oh, it was pirates that you were talking about.
Pirates I've been talking about for some time, only because everyone keeps harassing me to write a book about the pirates and Freemasons and Templars, because I see a very solid connection with worlds of research and worlds of evidence behind it, with archaeological evidence, symbolic evidence, ritual evidence, just all kinds of stuff that should satisfy any scholar to connect the Templars to the Freemasons through the underground of the Golden Age pirates. And I have had people ask me to write that for a long period of time. The real problem with that is, as I discovered with my first two books, you can spell stuff out so that people can understand it very easily. You can lock all your notes in place. You can cite all your sources. People don't want the truth, and they don't want to know something. They want to play with things. They want to theorize things. So it's almost self-defeating to try and write a book that explains things that are easily explainable, which is why I wrote a play about the pirates and the Masons and the Templars instead of a book about them. And I think that the play is 10 times better than the book that I would write, quite frankly, and does the job much better. I could end up writing that book anyway, somewhere down the line, just out of boredom, if nothing else. But I don't have any plans to at present. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. Well, we need something to talk about on Ruxgiving 2015, so.
I am amazed continually that we have no problem at all filling 2 hours with nothing planned in advance.
Yeah, and then needing to go into overtime.
As we did apparently get through all the questions and we're down to, what, like 4 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, we covered every question that was submitted in the proper fashion. And then of course, there were people in the chat room who had a whole slew of we got one, two, three, four, about four extra questions that came in during the conversation, which we'll get to after we say goodbye to the live listeners, so that gives them a reason to download the episode tomorrow morning and check it out.
There you go.
On that note, Bruce, I can't wait to get you writing for Banal of America. I'm really looking forward to it. People are clamoring for more Bruce Rocks always, so it'll be exciting to bring you into BOA 3.0. And as a fan, it'll be exciting to be able to read your stuff. Because as I said before on the show when we talked, I get these massive emails from you, and I really wish you'd share them with people. So now we'll get those into the arms of other folks, thank God. And I can't thank you enough for being a part of this. You know,
I very much enjoy doing this. The mere fact that if anyone really wants to listen, that's fine. I'm more than happy to chat. And I'm glad that I can help make people's holidays a little bit easier to get through.
Absolutely, yeah. That's how I feel as well. I really, I do love doing this show, and especially the holiday shows. As I said before, some folks, they're probably going to have Friday off. They're almost certainly going to be listening to this either while they're decompressing on Thursday afternoon or en route to Grandma's house Wednesday night or Thursday morning. So it's been a thrill to go along for the ride with you folks, and thank you for your support of Banal of America. This is our way of saying thanks, sort of having a bit of a dinner party on the Tuesday night before Thanksgiving with our old friend Bruce Rux. Let's throw the plugs in here as we wrap it up. Architects of the Underworld, as well as Hollywood versus the Aliens, I think they're pretty hard to get a hold of, but if you're committed and you really want them, you'll be able to. And hopefully soon they'll be back out in a more easily accessible fashion. But those are the Bruce Rucks books, folks. Go out and get them if you haven't yet. If you're just discovering this show somehow and you don't know how you found us, you definitely want to check out the website, binallofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. We're on Facebook, same thing, Binall of America, punch it in. We're up to 1,112 likes. We were at the magical 1111 recently, but we've already passed that. So kudos to those folks. The show is free, obviously. You're listening to this for free. You're downloading it for free. It doesn't cost you a thing. Costs me quite a bit, though. And if you could help us out, that would be great. You can do so by going to PayPal. Just head over to Binall of America. There's a PayPal button there. Click that. That'll walk you through the process. Also, we have a P.O. box, so you can mail us a P.O. box donation if you so choose. Normally, this is where we plug next week's episode, but I'm thinking about taking the week off because I got Thanksgiving, as all of you do, on Thursday, and I'm kind of burned out. I kind of want to take a little rest, and I got a huge work week coming up next week. So we'll most likely be back on December 10th. With an absolute slobber knocker of an episode, a real barn burner. I don't want to say much more about that. But you probably will hear from me next week because we're talking about doing a Good Parade Christmas special. So there may be a Good Parade Christmas special coming at you next Thursday. And on that note, thank you very much, folks, for tuning in. Stay tuned for more Rucksgiving leftovers in just a moment. We've bid farewell to the live listeners, but we're still recording, Bruce. So
wow. And effortless. It was effortless.
That was great. That was awesome. Thank you so much, man. I really do appreciate it. And, you know, folks are still listening as we speak, so not live, but to the podcast. So welcome to Rucksgiving Leftovers, folks. This is the second helping. This is where you get your cold turkey, your stuffing, pop it in the microwave.
We got some giblets and gravy.
Exactly. Now's the time to crack open the beer. So let's get down to business.
That's actually a great idea. I'm still having coffee. I am going to stop having a portion and have another cigarette, though. So
That's fine.
So if it frizzes, if it sounds a little funny, that's what it is, guys. Just bear with.
Yeah. This is the after party, so it's all good.
Cool.
While you head outside for the cigarette, the first question that popped in the chat right at the beginning was also from Hillbilly, who wrote in earlier. He wanted to know your thoughts on Velikovsky, which is, I think, something that you and I have never talked about before. So,
I meant to bring him up when we were talking about Sitchin and the planetary collision stuff. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of questions coming, and Velikovsky came to mind, so I'm not surprised that he got brought up here. I'm very familiar with Velikovsky. I feel the same way about him as I do about Sitchin, which is to say that he did a remarkable amount of research. I do not believe he's completely correct, and in some instances I'm positive he isn't. He has the same problem with planetary mechanics that Sitchin does, only in his case it's that he doesn't take into account Bode's law. Bode's law says that planets are always at specific astronomical units of measurement, and that will be true throughout the universe, and so far we have found that to be the case. If Velikovsky was correct that Venus originated as a body inside of the planet Jupiter, was ejected, and ended up in the place where it's at, then Velikovsky would have to account for what was taking the place that Venus occupied before Venus got there. And he doesn't do that. There had to be a planet there before. However, even if he's wrong about that, I don't think he's wrong about everything else. The real problem with Velikovsky is nailing down exactly what he was right about. He's not someone that I ever throw out with the bathwater. I think he was a very, very intelligent guy and did some phenomenal research. And every now and then I do take Worlds in Collision off the shelf and go through it again with a fresh eye just to see what I might find in it. He's worth reading. You have to go at him kind of carefully. But all in all, he's not any worse than a lot of the current crop. For instance, I've mentioned Hoagland already. I think Hoagland's wrong on several things. It doesn't mean he hasn't done a lot of good research. And a lot of it that I quote and cite myself. Robert Temple, who wrote The Sirius Mystery, it's an excellent book. He's written other books that I think are completely off base, and he does have errors in The Sirius Mystery. However, The Sirius Mystery is still worth reading. Once you get a certain base of knowledge, you can go with all of these guys with a little bit better critical eye. It's okay if someone is wrong on something, you know? It doesn't mean they're wrong about everything. And if their research is sufficient that it's worth looking at in the first place, go ahead and look at it. Just, you know, be careful and go at it with a critical eye and read the criticisms of it and try and factor those things in when you're looking at their stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's with somebody like Velikovsky's, part of it is, like you said, he probably had a lot of good ideas, but he was from a different era. There's new science now, you know.
Yes.
There are things that he couldn't have possibly known that he obviously, if he was alive today, he would have, you know, the thing would have evolved. His theories would have evolved and changed.
He would probably have amended his own theories. I agree.
So, I never really got too into that either. I think partially because everybody, I got into all this like in 2003 or 2004, and I think a lot of people. By then, he had already been kind of written off and kind of like Lowell, the guy who saw all the stuff on the moon. Like, no one ever seemed to, or Mars, I mean, but no one ever seemed to give Velikovsky much due by the time I got into all this. So I have to revisit him, I think.
Velikovsky was pretty much universally despised from the start. He flew in the face of all the conventional wisdom. The thing is, he was right about most of what he wrote about as far as the solar system went. But that doesn't mean that all of his theories are correct.
All right. That covers the Velikovsky part. Kimberly Reck wanted to know your thoughts on this thing called the Black Satellite. Have you heard of this?
I have not heard of this.
Okay, that's why I didn't even bother to break in through the program and mention it, because it was completely news to me, too. It's apparently this strange object out in the solar system. It's the Black Knight satellite. Maybe that might, I doubt that would ring any additional bells for you. But
sounds cool.
Yeah, it's called the Black Knight satellite. If you Google it, it looks like a rock that's floating around. Apparently it's in orbit around the Earth. And there's various theories about it. But I've never even heard of it, so I can't imagine either it's just getting big now or it got big and got debunked and people still are hanging on to it. I mean, I don't know anything about it. This
asteroid, planetoid, part of a comet? Does anyone know what it is?
Exactly. I just did a Google search here, and it says the Black Knight satellite mystery. There's a Black Knight YouTube thing. Are you on the computer still?
Actually, I will be once I'm back inside. I'm out on the porch right now.
Okay, well, I'll keep talking, and then when you get in, just put the Black Knight satellite. So at least you can get a look at it and give me your thoughts on it.
Right, gotcha.
This is the leftover part of the show, folks. Just relax. We're having a good time.
Yeah, I'm drinking a beer and smoking.
Exactly. Then I see from AboveTopSecret.com, it says the 1,300-year-old satellite, the full story behind the Black Knight. So it has sort of this underground, the Black Knight satellite from ForbiddenHistory.info. So it's sort of bounced around here. It looks like it's been around for a while now.
Huh.
But I don't know anything about it. I've never heard of it. So it's.
Well, I don't fully keep current on all this stuff. I was doing all my research, obviously, about 20 years ago, and I do keep up on a lot of things, and I do follow up on my own research. But I don't keep current with all of the whatever buzz is going on in the paranormal community.
Right.
When I was doing the thing with Redfern, he was bringing stuff up I'd never heard of before. Hmm. Black Eyed Kids? What's Black Eyed Kids? They're like a singing group, aren't they, with Fergie or something?
Yeah.
Who has a phenomenal voice, by the way.
Who's that, Fergie?
Yeah.
She's great. I like Fergie.
Incredible voice.
Yeah. It's, I'm at a loss to say anything beyond that, but yeah. Incredible voice, incredible body as well. Let's say that. Okay, well, while I wait for you to look at the black satellite thing on the picture, she also wants to know if Stargate could be real. I was stifling laughter on that one, but since it's just you and me and all these listeners, now I'm already backtracking on my own thing, because the more I think about it, I do sort of, I wouldn't say subscribe to the reality of Stargate, but I don't close the book on it either. So what do you think? Is Stargate the possibility possible, real?
Well, that's a little complex. I don't know about wormholes or any of that. Physicists stroke each other off heavily under the table and come up with mathematical equations to orgasm. It doesn't mean that they have the slightest idea what they're talking about. They just theorize a whole bunch of shit, and because they can put a lot of math onto it, they think it sounds good, and the next thing you know, they're talking about them as though they're real.
Hmm.
We don't know that they're real. They don't occur in nature. We're positive of that. Einstein talked about the possibility that they exist, but we've never seen any evidence that they do. We just theorize them, because they would be neat if they did. We could use them if they existed. But we haven't found any evidence that they do. They certainly don't occur in nature, and we would not know how to make one. If the bunch of physicists stroking each other off under the table want to keep doing so and possibly come up with something, more power to them.
Yeah.
I'm the last person in the world to just look at something and say, if you can find something there, go for it. Off the top of my head, I consider it probably pretty unlikely. I don't think we have them, let's put it that way. But I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, that was the big debate, I think. There was a school of thought, a very small school of thought, maybe a preschool of thought, of that the whole Iraq war was based on the decision to go in and stop Saddam Hussein from using a Stargate, or that he had come upon Stargate technology. It was fringe theory, but
that's
who knows.
Much more elaborate than I would put it. What we did do, we pilfered the hell out of the museums. The Baghdad battery, that's gone. That's probably in somebody's private collection now, along with all kinds of other ancient artifacts from Sumer and Babylon, which is very, very unfortunate.
Mm.
Shortly before that, at the end of Clinton's administration, there was a question earlier about whether or not evidence was deliberately suppressed. Absolutely. There were a whole number of sites that had Ogham writing on them and what appeared to be Egyptian hieroglyphs in the Americas that were sandblasted clean, like about 1998, 1999, I think, in there. The government just went in and phew, erased them. It was Dr. Zayas blowing up the caves. There's deliberate suppression of a lot of those.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we talked about this as far as, like, the Alexandrian Library and stuff, you know.
Oh, God. For all we know, they had recorded how they built the pyramids there. We don't know.
Hmm.
We have no idea what we lost to the Library of Alexandria. It was just an incalculable loss.
I never even gave it any thought, but when you say it like that, yeah, that is pretty... That is a possibility. It may have just been common knowledge back then.
It may have been common knowledge, and now it's not.
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. Are you back to the computer so you can look at this black satellite?
I will be shortly. I'm finishing this little puppy up right now.
No worries. I'm not going to rush you. Like I said, this is the after party, so... We're all good.
I'm having a great time.
Oh, hold on a moment.
Enjoying myself. Yeah, sure.
Someone knocking at my door, so hold on. Go for it.
Men in Black.
We're going to actually have a bit of an emergency here in the house, so we're going to have to cut the after party short here. So, are you going to be around in about 45 minutes? I will call you, and we'll finish it up, just you and I, and I'll paste it in later.
Sure.
All right, we'll do that, because I got to go look at what the hell is going on. We got a leak. A leak in the middle of the show, so that's never a good thing. On that note, we'll pause here.
Just to explain the weird happenstance just now for you and the listeners, it is the holiday season, so you can always count on the water heater going 2 days before Thanksgiving. So I had to rush out and figure out how to stop the bleeding, if you will, and do some vacuuming. Luckily, it's all better for now.
Mine died 2 years ago, I can relate.
We're just really fortunate that we didn't find out about it until the live show was over. Otherwise, we probably would have had to cut the live show short. But luckily, we were in the after party. So let's just finish up these remaining questions from the folks in the chat room. We had Kimberly Reck. We talked about the Stargate situation. I think that's when things went haywire. But the Black Satellite, the Black Knight Satellite, did you look at that thing?
Yes, I did. Now I know what it is. I hadn't heard it referred to under that name before. This is the unknown satellite that was apparently tailing Sputnik when Sputnik was first launched. Sputnik was the first satellite put into orbit. The Russians beat us to it. Everyone was very unhappy about that. They beat us to everything in space, just by the by. They got all the best, Nazi rocket scientists to the end of the war. Anyway, people still dispute the Black Knight satellite. It's pretty well documented that something was up there. That's kind of hard to hide, and it was seen on more than one occasion. It wasn't just after Sputnik. There were astronauts that reported seeing it. Whether they actually saw it or not is still in question. I find it kind of odd in this day and age especially that we can't peg every single satellite up there. And the Black Knight is one of those things that, depending on who you ask, they're either going to say, oh, it didn't exist, or, well, it was something natural, or it was a secret satellite that couldn't be talked about at the time because of the Cold War. Something was up there, I'm sure of that. John Keel wrote about it in his books, and I think Donald Kehoe did too. So it dates back to 1960 anyway, at least our discovery of it. Now, in theory, again, depending on whoever you talk to, there was someone who claimed to get a signal from it that did a star map for 13,000 years ago from the Epsilon Bodies system, I think. That's a very interesting claim, and I'd like to chase that down further if I could find anything more on it. 13,000 years ago is just that date that keeps popping up over and over and over again, especially in my line of research. I wouldn't necessarily discount it as someone else's secret satellite. I wouldn't discount it as an extraterrestrial satellite either.
Yeah.
There's just really no way to tell. And again, depending on what source you read, science, I've been looking up some articles on this on the web in the interim.
Yeah.
Scientific pages will pretty much admit that it was there, but they debunk it as much as they possibly can or try and naturally explain it. I don't blame them. But even they admit, yeah, there's a possibility that there's something extraterrestrial up there. In any event, whatever it was, it had a polar orbit, and it might still be up there. And the polar orbit meant that it could pretty well scan everything. It wasn't an equatorial orbit. It could kind of relay information from pretty much the whole planet. It was more advanced than anyone at the time should have been able to have up there. I mean, in theory, we did not have a satellite up there, and Sputnik was the first one the Russians had up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the Russians had anything as advanced as the Black Knight satellite, whatever it was, at the time that they put up Sputnik. And certainly we didn't.
Yeah.
And if we did, we certainly couldn't admit it to anybody. Now, when you factor the Cold War in, there are a whole lot of UFO reports or any kind of extraterrestrial reports that have to be regarded not necessarily skeptically, but carefully. Because there were a lot of things that we couldn't talk about, and if there were any secret projects going, definitely we had to keep them under the radar. I'm sure Roswell was kept under the radar largely because of that. And if we picked up a piece of extraterrestrial technology in 1947, the last thing in the world we would want is for the Russians to know that we had it, or anyone else for that matter. We'd want to exploit it long before they even knew we had it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, you just punch in Black Knight, and it's all over the place.
There are NASA pictures of it, clear ones.
Yeah.
And a matter of fact, the clear one that I saw, let me see if I can find the sign again. Hold on a second.
It's weird. It does look more like a rock, though, than a ship, but I don't know how. I'm only looking at a couple pictures.
Well, there's one. I can find your site. Hold on a second. Ah, here we go. I'm on www.armaghplanet.com. Armagplanet.com.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, I just went to it. Okay. Armagh Planetarium. Interesting. Ireland's leading center for astronomical education. Weird. That's
okay.
Pretty mainstream.
Well, I'm on a page called The Truth About the Black Knight Satellite Mystery. And there's a NASA picture here.
Okay, it's the first one that comes up when you punch in Black Knight Satellite.
Right.
Yep.
There's a NASA picture here showing the thing, which is partway down the page. And the picture that they have looks almost like the stealth bomber.
Yeah, I'm seeing it, yeah. That's very weird.
At least that's what I would call it. If I were just looking at this picture and they didn't tell me what it was, I'd say it was the stealth bomber.
Yeah. I'm sure, I have a feeling I haven't read the article, but I presume that the Armagh Planetarium is saying that it's not a alien ship. So,
well,
that's just based on the fact that it's a mainstream site.
Right. They admit that there appeared to have been some kind of object up there, and well, here's the NASA picture. So God knows what it is. One thing they tried to discount it as, they thought it might be a blanket that came off of the space station when a cover came off.
Oh, God.
A black blanket. Yeah, I know. I find that one pretty outrageous, too. I wouldn't even necessarily rule it out. I just put it on the far realm of possibility. But they did try and kind of toss that one out there.
That's ridiculous.
They're also suggesting a declassified information now released from that time suggests the object was a Corona spy satellite under disguise at the time of the U.S. Discoverer research satellite program, or at least at that time. So, yeah, they come up with alternate explanations for what it might be, but they at least admit that there appears to have been something up there.
Hmm. Okay. All right, we covered Stargates, so we don't need to redo that. Red Sun Superman, in the second to last question, he wants to know if you believe that Roddenberry really didn't have much to do with Star Trek's origins. Supposedly, some other guy is responsible for Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica. I've never heard
Leslie
of that.
Leslie Stevens. We're referring to Leslie Stevens. When I did that other podcast with Chris Knowles, we were talking about that specifically. Knowles and I are both very seriously into the original Outer Limits and the original Star Trek, and especially into Leslie Stevens. Leslie Stevens was the amanuense grease behind a whole lot of sci-fi that was going on in the 1960s, and he was the kind of guy that did not mind taking a back seat or even necessarily getting any credit at all. Gene Roddenberry actually had an office at the Daystar Productions studios that did The Outer Limits in 1964, during the first season, when Leslie Stevens was most involved with it. That didn't come up until decades later when someone at Daystar mentioned it in passing in an interview. He just said that Roddenberry was at the studios so often while they were filming The Outer Limits, they had his own office there. What's funny is Roddenberry never advertised that fact, nor did Leslie Stevens. The suggestion for Captain Kirk, originally Gene Roddenberry wanted Jeffrey Hunter to play Captain Kirk. And the person who suggested that it be William Shatner was Leslie Stevens, interestingly enough. Wait. And he made the right call. Stevens had much more, Shatner had much more charisma and the right kind of feel for that role, I think. Certainly he's much more memorable. And the world would have been greatly different if he had not played that part. So that was Stevens' suggestion. The original thing that Roddenberry came up with, you can actually find his original précis for Star Trek online. I don't know exactly where it's at, but if you just search around a little bit, you'll find it. Mm. It's very badly thought out. It's not at all what we recognize today. And it's entirely possible, I can't say that I know this, but it's entirely possible that Leslie Stevens had a very heavy hand in Star Trek and that Gene Roddenberry was just basically helming it for everybody. I would not rule that out. I can't say that for a fact. That's something you might want to email Knowles on his site, The Secret Sun, and ask him about that. He's got a lot to say on that particular subject.
Okay.
But certainly he and I have talked about it quite a bit.
All right. What about Battlestar Galactica? Kind of the same thing.
Battlestar Galactica, that was Leslie Stevens.
Oh, okay.
His name is actually on the credits.
Okay.
So, yeah, he had a hand in that, no question.
Okay. All right. And then the final question, sort of a lighthearted one to wrap it up. What are your Thanksgiving plans? It's probably a good way to close out this year's Ruxgate.
My Thanksgiving plan. I actually have plans this Thanksgiving. I don't
always.
I've already had my dinner with my mom. We try and avoid it on the actual holiday just because parking's a little bit difficult there and it gets to be a bit of a zoo. So we usually do it either right before or right after, and we did it before. And, of course, I'll call her on the phone and we'll chat for a little while. I've got a couple of my best friends coming over on Thanksgiving, and we're just going to make a whole bad movie night day of it.
Nice.
We're going to have a ball.
Do you know what you're going to be watching yet?
We sure do. We usually go on themes, and just, was it last night? Yeah, it was just last night we were talking about this. So what do you guys want to watch? And they're in the mood for comedies right now. So we're actually going to watch Meet the Spartans, which is the satire of 300.
Oh, God, it's terrible. And, I've seen that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But we love that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they haven't seen it. So we're going to see that. We're going to watch the Twilight satire, Vampires Suck. We'll probably watch something like Transylvania or other very terrible movies, but very funny movies, and just kind of make a day of it. And I'm sure we'll probably pop a couple of decent ones in before the day is out, too.
Nice, nice. Sounds good. You kind of have similar plans to me, kind of low-key. I try to catch up on the big summer comedies around Thanksgiving, so I'll watch, I don't even know yet, I have to look at them, but Hangover 3 and some of the other, whatever the big summer comedies were, I'll watch those on Thursday.
If we'd figured it out sooner, I would have put This Is the End at the top of my rental list.
I'm planning on seeing that, yeah. So that'll be good. All right. Well, on that note, sorry for the long pause that people don't know we're talking about, but I had to go.
We always have long pauses. Yeah. What is it with you guys?
I had to go tend to a leaking water heater, which thankfully didn't apparently get noticed until after the live show, thank goodness.
It's not fun. Hopefully you can get that taken care of tomorrow.
That's what we're hoping for, because otherwise it's going to have to wait till Black Friday, and God only knows if they're going to be able to get out here by then. So it's probably the worst possible time, literally.
Yeah, right? And they'll charge you for it, too. See if you can get them out tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to do our best. But nonetheless, I will not let that mar this year's Ruxgiving. So thank you so much, Bruce, for coming back on the show, doing the Ruxgiving, including the Ruxgiving leftovers, the after chat. I really do appreciate that.
Always a pleasure. It was great fun.